Welcome back. I'm Kim Bailey. She's Fuliana Osborne, and this is Inside Exec. We are now at the third part of our discussion with Dr. Terry Lyles and Stephen Bowen, and we're going to look at why their book and their advice and their thoughts are self-help rather than shelf help. And actually, they don't think it's self-help. They think it's something else again. So let's hear what they've got to say.
Well, that's why I love chapter 8 when we talk. It's one of your questions. I don't want to ask it for you, but, you know, it's like, you know, why do you do this? Like, right. I mean, like, what is, listen, you know, it's like, why is it not self-help? How do you get it to, like, self-care, self-actuation? Mm-hmm. And we call that Goya, G-O-Y-A. And it's in chapter 8. And not to be crass, but it literally means get off your ass. It's just like, do something. Just fail forward.
Yep.
And I learned a really hard lesson over 38 and a half years of living with a special needs son who was in a wheelchair, never spoke, never walked, diapered and fed as an infant, passed almost 2 years ago now. And I learned how to serve greatness by surrendering to something I couldn't fix. Mm-hmm. It had to fix me. I had to learn how to not be what I thought I was, to become something that invaluable I didn't know that I could be. And that life lesson, like Steve said, with business and life, we all have our learning incubators that teach us how to be humble, how to be respectful, and how to become invaluable. And that's the stories we shared in here, is whatever your story is, live your story. Don't be ashamed of it. Live your story, live out loud, and live like there is no tomorrow.
That story, Terry, I don't want to put any words in your mouth or express something you don't want to express, but I've heard you talk about it many times. So I'll give a quick synopsis for those out there that might not understand. Terry's trained 10,000 fighter pilots, something like that, a bunch of fighter pilots. He's trained race car drivers in every aspect from Formula One to IndyCar to NASCAR. And he's done all of that. You know how that all started? Because of his 38-year-old that passed away 2 years ago, his special needs son, when he finally got comfortable with taking him anywhere in public and took him to an IndyCar race, which Terry's from Indianapolis in the first place. So it was at the Indianapolis 500. And for those that might be more of our generation, might remember the name Emerson Fittipaldi, spotted him and came and showed sincere empathy and then invited Terry and his son to the pits the next day. And that started Terry with Roger Penske's organization training race car drivers. Yeah. Now, how humbling is that, that after all the years of education for Terry, that's how it happened? And that's what I think you're talking about, Terry. And I've heard you tell this story so many times, and I don't mean to bring tears to your eyes, but it brings tears to most people's eyes listening to it. It certainly did to mine many times hearing it. And that's, you know, finding those kind of hurdles to figure out whether it takes you a few days or years to get beyond. You have to keep trying to get beyond. I hope I'm saying that fairly, Terry.
No, it's beautiful. I mean, you tell it better than I do, but that is invaluable. It's knowing that who you're not to understand who you can become. And that's why it's becoming invaluable. It's present tense, active voice.
Beautiful. And thank you for sharing that with our listeners as well. The second question, only half an hour and we're up to the second question already.
Yeah.
It's about your little words, which you've thrown into the conversation already. So it's about willitude and navigate. I understand those two, and I would encourage the readers to listen to what those two mean, because you've talked about those already, and I'm sure you will again. Did you come up with those while you were writing it, or were they phrases that you used in your various activities before that?
Terry, why don't you kick it off? Because you kind of had navigate ready.
Yeah, I came up with navigate, and he came up with willitude, and it just kind of happened. This is what authorship brings. You know, him and I have a synergy. We talk, and I'm coaching his teams and other teams in corporate America and international. And sometimes I'm navigating, like most times, but sometimes I'm negotiating people and navigating things. Other times I'm navigating things and negotiating with people, depending on the business or the budgets. And it just became this reality of navigating. I mean, it depends on, it's like co-pilot pilot, like who's flying.
Yep.
Like somebody has the stick right now, you know, and sometimes it's navigate, sometimes it's negotiate. And I just wanted to know, like, how do I design that I'm either flying or I got to let somebody else fly. And it's okay because we're still in the same aircraft. If somebody makes a mistake, it's not a good day for anybody.
It's a good collective phrase for people to understand the difference, but their interdependency. And I think that too often when we're thinking about work situations, we'll think of one or the other. And it's not that simple. It's not that black and white. So that's a great explanation. Will it, you, Steve? Let's go.
What happened out of that, Kim? What happened out of that?
Steve, go ahead. Go ahead with yours.
Yeah, when Terry and I were sharing and having this discussion around negotiating people and things, and which way does that happen? I said, Terry, you just solved the problem I've been trying to figure out for years. 30 years ago, in the world of human resource management and training and development, people commonly use knowledge, skills, and attitude. What do you need to know to do your job? What do you do with what you know, and how do you feel about what you do? But somewhere along the line, the word attitude kind of became, and that's not so, I hate to use the term politically correct, but it's the only one I can think of. Yeah. I never really understood it. And then they tried to use this word willingness, okay? But attitude kind of changed in context over the years, as did another word, fortitude. Where fortitude used to be like, you know, 1,000 years ago, it was about physical strength. Fortitude today is really looked at as mental strength. Most people think of it that way, at least in English-speaking Western world anyway. So I said, here it is, will, and whether you want to use fortitude, which is what we chose, or attitude, willitude, we put the two words together. And then it took us, what, Terry, about 2 weeks or so, and we went back and forth and we landed on this phrase, develop the willitude to negotiate success, which means you have to have the drive, the stamina, the knowledge and skill sets to deal with people and everything you encounter. And that's how we ended up in that with that phrase.
Yeah, I guess my reaction to the willitude one is that it's a much stronger word than any of the other individual words that brought it together.
Yeah.
It has more power.
There's something about it. I picked up on a post the other day. I've never had this happen in my life. I'm not a very social media savvy person. I picked up on a post the other day that I really loved. It was this story about the woman. I won't go into the whole details of it, but I put it out and I said, here's an example of having the willitude along with the ability to negotiate your success. And that's all I said. Got 2,000 impressions in like 3 days. And I was like, what?
You're like, what? You're like, did you make those words up? Or yet, yes, we did. And they're now in the English language because we published it.
That's
yes,
right.
We did.
And they're our words. They're trademarked.
Yeah.
You know, my 10-year-old will read them 20 years from now. I go, my dad was crazy. But you know what? He made up a word with this guy named Steve. So we all made up words, you know.
Have you got any others that you're working on or that you've come up with?
Any other words or any other books?
Any other words? We'll just go words.
Yeah, we got words. Now, I think of a word in every book. Like stressology was in my book, Good Stress. Yeah, so stressology, the study of stress and how to appropriate.
There's one that's one of my favorites. Terry picked up on Goya, which was something he had seen and read about and taught myself and my team about that, you know, he had gotten from somewhere else. And there's another one in the book. I call it the Yuri Key. And it's actually not by me. It's by another gentleman that wrote a book. He was an acting coach. Okay. And the letters are U-R-Y. And what it's there to remind you of is you are why anything happens. Okay. In your life. So that's the first part of it. But it's also there as a way to say you're up, relaxed, and yes. And the way this coach taught his actors and actresses to get there is to come up with that 30-second video in your mind, and you might have a couple of them, that you know you were at your absolute best. You were in the zone. You were performing at the top of your game, no matter what that was. Get that video. Play it in your mind. Get it locked tight. Do not share it with anyone else. Because if someone else, if you were to share it and they say, I don't think that's so great, they just ruined the video for you, right? But what you do is you keep that to yourself. And before you walk into that significant presentation, to that performance that you've been looking forward to doing and working so hard to practice for, right? Whatever it is, whether a musician, whatever it is, then just before you walk on that stage, you play that 30-second video in your mind to remind yourself you are why, and put yourself in a state of mind of you're up, relaxed, and yes. And that little tool is so powerful. And that came from a gentleman by the name of Ken Delmar, to mention his name. His book's no longer in print. But I just found it fascinating. Now, what was I doing? Because I've seen some of your other stuff, Kim. What was I doing reading a book about acting when I'm in sales and consulting? Well, because we all have to be able to learn skills from different venues and different viewpoints in order to really be able to perform them at a level of 9 or 9.5. I don't think there's any 10 in the world on anything. There's just 9 and 9.5.
Well, you've always got to be striving for something. So, we'll keep striving for the 10. When Steve gives us a 10, we'll know we've made it.
Well, you get a 10, that's a big... these are the things that Steve and I talk about. So I love the word confidence as an example. And we talk about this in the book. Confidence or convince. That means you have to con yourself into believing something that you're probably not. We've all had con people that conned us into doing something. How can you con yourself into believing that you are invaluable? Which means I'm going to believe in me more than I believe in what other people say to me, and I'm going to go sell it. And I may not have all the proof. I'm going to go sell it because I believe in me that much. My energy, my acumen, and my ability will show that and prove that. So it's these words that are very powerful that we share within the book and with these stories, these 9 spotlights that were incredible people for us. I mean, all the podcasts we did with them, we're launching all this. It's coming out on audio. We're putting it into Spanish. We're just very in becoming invaluable in whoever you are.
One of the stories that brings to mind from our book is a gentleman by the name of Dan Clark. And if I have my page numbers right, Terry, maybe you can help me out here. I think he's 40 something, but I'm just drawing a blank right at the moment. You'll help me out. Dan is at the end of the second chapter. And Dan
page
Clark.
48. He's page 48.
48. I was close. I just couldn't quite pull out the 8.
You were so chapter 2. So we tell them all they have tattoos. So their page number is their tattoo. We have 9 people. It's like, you got to tattoo that. That's your number.
Dan Clark's story is one of the most amazing human stories I've ever heard. I'll try to do quick summary and still do justice to it, which is hard to do both. Dan encountered cancer as a young child, 8 or 9 years old. He overcame that. He went on to become a very good athlete in high school. He made it to the college ranks. He played college football. The Oakland then Raiders, now the Oakland Las Vegas Raiders, but the Oakland Raiders had told him they were taking him as their first round draft choice. That would be the 3rd pick in the NFL draft. Okay. On a practice day before the last 2 games that he had as a senior, he had a head-on collision with one of his teammates in a normal drill, and it literally paralyzed him from the neck down. He then saw 16 different doctors because he decided he was going to find a way to walk again. And every doctor until the 16th had told him, I don't think you're ever going to walk again. But the 16th doctor said, there might be a way we can pull this off. He ends up telling this whole story to football teams and to, I'll use your term, nonprofit organizations in many different venues, right? In many different venues. And he happens upon Zig Ziglar, maybe one of the biggest names, speaking names of all time. And Zig Ziglar took him under his wing. And today, Dan is one of the top 10 and in the Hall of Fame of worldwide speakers. And his journey was not a straight line. In fact, it had some serious valleys in it. You know, it's just an amazing. And if you meet him, you just can't even believe, how can he be so positive after going through so many difficult. And these things didn't get dealt with in a matter of days or weeks. These things got dealt with years it took him. That's what I think of when I think of people who really want to help themselves become invaluable. They have to really realize this is a journey of years. This is a journey of practicing, reading, learning, writing it all down, making sure you revisit it every week, every day of your life, and keep getting a little better. And guess what? You're going to fail at a lot of it. Maybe I always like to say I failed at a lot more things than I succeeded at. And I really honestly believe that.
I think, too, what it shows is that you don't know where the journey is going to take you. That, you know, I can't imagine that as a prospective football player, he thought that his career would be in public speaking or in motivational speaking. You know, he might have thought that that might come after he retired and, you know, might be part of what he does. But it's just interesting that we don't limit ourselves to what we think is the path that we should follow, or that that should be the goal, that, that there are other opportunities, and to take the opportunities when they present themselves, or to work towards finding out whether it is an opportunity or not. Fabulous. Thank you.
And that is becoming invaluable. It's it's realizing that our life goes through variations, you know, high school, college, work, retirement, marriage, remarriage, birth of a child, death of a child. I mean, it can go from everywhere. But how do you sustain invaluable?
It's interesting, too, because when I was working
in, and that comes down to a quality that we believe about ourselves.
When I worked in the corporate world in human resources, I used to talk to people about, you will have three distinct career changes in your lifetime that are complete turnarounds from anything you've ever thought about before. And they would look at me like askance. And then years later, I would see them and say, oh, well, I did this and I did this. And I never thought about applying it to myself. And when I got to a point where I decided that I didn't want to do human resources anymore, and I thought, I have no idea what I'm going to do, and you know, I've done all this all my life, and didn't even think back to how I got to human resources in the first place, because I trained as an architect. I worked as an architect for a little period of time, but it was hard going because it was the 70s and I was the only woman in the class and the only woman in most of the companies that I went to. What happened at the time was that one organization decided that I was very good at public speaking and that I would be very good at training the other staff to be able to present the projects and those sorts of things. So I moved into that because it was comfortable. I knew what I was doing. I didn't have to fight every day for my professional worth. And that led to the human resources. But when I got to the end of the human resources, I thought, what'll I do? And at that stage, I was quite interested in repairing old books. And so I set up this, what was called the book ambulance, and I went around, it was a mobile service, went around and fixed people's family Bibles and all the books and things like that. And I thought to myself at the end of that, I thought, I never thought I'd be doing this. You know, this was just an interest that I had that I just thought, oh, well, I'll just see how it goes. And so it's often, I think, that we are very good at giving advice to other people, but we don't always internalize it and apply it to our own lives as well. So it's great to hear your stories and to hear that you have worked through those and are applying it continuously. Running out of time, but I do want to get to the last two questions. The first one is about, how has working remotely influenced career progression? So are you seeing a change in the way people look at their careers and develop their careers because we've had a period of time where working remotely was the only option?
If you don't mind, Terry, I'd like to take this one because
After
the career path I'd had and various opportunities I'd had, I started my company, you know, just about exactly 20 years ago from now. Okay. When I started my company and I said, I'm going to build a remote company. I'm not going to have offices. I'm not going to have people coming to offices and doing all this training and all this stuff. We're going to be a remote company. we're going to use a combination of employees. Now, 20 years ago, and I'm going to use subcontractors is what we called them at that time. Now it's, you know, the gig economy, 1099 contract here in the United States, whatever terms you want to use it. And people thought I was absolutely insane. Okay. They thought there's just, how are you ever going to make this work? To me, when you look at the career paths, there's two things that become essential. First of all, what I think so many companies and leaders of companies were incapable of doing is sustaining and maintaining the feeling of a culture that reached out and embraced the people, you know, in this post-COVID era after being forced into it. They didn't know how to do it. But what did we do really differently? And what can we keep doing really differently? The other side of that is then from the individual perspective. Now, admittedly, some people probably thrive in the office environment with people around them every day and all of that. And other people probably thrive in a very independent fashion. So to me, I don't think there is one right answer. But what I would say to anyone for their career perspective, and I would say this first to the individual, is I would say, if you thrive in an environment where you have people surrounding you all the time, then that's where you should be.
Yeah.
If you thrive and do better work and stay more focused and get more done when you're working independently on your own at home in your home office, whatever that environment is, then make sure that you channel yourself to focus that way. What I would say to the leaders in today's organizations is wake up and stop requiring your people to be, you must be in the office on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or you must be back in the office starting, you know, January 1st, 2024, 5 days a week. You know what the people are going to say? Guess what? I'm going to find a job at another company that will let me have some independence. And at the same time, somewhere in there, there's a balance. I'm giving some of the extremes here, but there has to be a balance and there has to be an acceptance of both. And frankly, I think many of corporate America, I can only speak to that. I can't speak to corporate Australia, but I suspect there could be some of the same characteristics. And when you look at the makeup of the boards of those companies, they don't even know how to spell a dispersed, independent, decentralized organization, right? So that's my input, is find the environment you can thrive in, whether that be working for a big corporation independently or in a big office, it doesn't matter. You got to find that for yourself. It's kind of like what we're saying about, you've got to invest in yourself and know yourself really well.
And that's the part that makes you invaluable, because you're identifying what is going to work for you.
100%.
All right. Our last question, which we probably covered in some ways, was about how can our listeners make your book self-help rather than shelf help? And shelf help is a term that we use here about, you know, and I'm going like that because there's two bookcases out there that my partner has that are full of shelf help.
And, well, you know, a shelf is just a holding place for a book you haven't read yet. So we're just trying to stay on top of that book reading list. And not just because we wrote it, you know, it's because we think it has value. You know, it becoming invaluable was really the passion of what we did. And it's really not, we don't really consider it, or I don't, Steve, you could say differently, but not a self-help. It's like, just be you. Mm-hmm. Be you with a plan. And our book is about putting a plan together for you to become invaluable every single day. And it's really a simple read. I mean, it's not really complex. It's not profound. I mean, Steve is more profound than I am. It's not about being profound. It's more about just like, wow, if I just did these one or two or three things, I could change my life.
Yep.
That's what we're about.
Just in talking about that, do you find commonality with people who have read it, who have used it, or you've worked with? Is there one overriding thing that they can address that works more often than not for people?
I don't know if we have enough. We just launched the book in November, right? And so I don't know if we have enough data to really highlight that. But what I hear from people is I hear two things consistently. This is like the most practical thing I've ever read about, you know, trying to achieve whatever you're trying to achieve. And I said, well, thank you very much, because that's what we hope to, that's the chord we hope to strike. And secondly, people have loved the spotlight stories.
Yep.
The nine different people in the first eight chapters, because the last chapter doesn't have a spotlight at the end of it. That's the end of the book. And those nine are in the first eight chapters. Those are the two things that people have highlighted to me the most. What I would encourage anybody to think about is this. Is the only way that I know how to digest something is to read it using your sight, write it using your touch, listen to it. Our Audible book will be out, I think, this week, but maybe next week. Our Audible book will be out. Listen
right,
to
right.
it. To embed these concepts into your brain, your through your different senses, so you truly tap whatever emotional chord it might touch for you, because at the end of the day, humans are emotional beings. We make decisions based on emotion, not logic, almost all the time. That's what I would encourage people to think about.
Fabulous. We will put all of the details so that people can get all of those various versions for themselves and a bit of the background for both of you so that they can be in touch if they so choose. But we really do appreciate the time and the contribution that you have shared with us today. It's been great talking to you and hearing your
stories. Thank you. Yeah.
We wish you well, and we'll of course be waiting with bated breath for book two of the combined authorship.
Oh, it's coming already. Yeah, we're already talking. So Steve doesn't know yet, but I have a title a week that comes up in my head, so he'll figure it out. Thank you, Kim. You're awesome. Thank you.
Thank you so much for inviting us on and having us be able to visit with your listeners. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, it'll be something becoming invaluable as something. So we'll bait you with that, whatever that is. So we'll figure out the plan.
So now it's going to be a series. It's going to be becoming invaluable as X,
absolutely.
Becoming invaluable as Y. So,
you already stole our information.
It's this generation's chicken soup. I understand. Fine.
Yeah.
Fine.
Well, that's it.
The I, the we, and the it. Right?
And the it. Yeah, that's it. We got a lot going, so we got to. Thank you, Kim. Thank you so much.
What a great discussion that was with Dr. Terry Lyles and Stephen Bowen. Join us for another episode of Inside Exec. For now, I'm Kim Bailey. She's Fuliana Osborne.